All right, we are starting Cutthroat by Imagine Dragons because you know my deep disdain of Imagine Dragons. Live look of just how my face
Yeah, this is
reacts.
your first time listening to it. So he reports. Yeah, just listen. Let's play.
Please tell me this is short. 2:49. Okay, I might get through like a minute of this.
Yeah, let me see what my response was when.
It's as if they never got through their screamo phase in 2010.
Right? It's like, no, that's us. I was like, out of curiosity,
Did
which
he
was the
really just said,
first
"I'm
one?
so misunderstood, but I live for this"?
I remember when I said, out of curiosity, which was the first one you listened to, Follow You or Cutthroat? And you said, Follow You. And my response was just, oh man,
That's
because I
brutal.
listened to Cutthroat first. Look at the camera when you make that face. Well, we're going to talk about this momentarily, but listen to the rest of the song one
Which
more
one is
time.
worse?
Which one?
Shit!
Which one? Which one? Which
Which one?
one?
Which
Which
one?
one? Which
Which
one? Which
one?
one?
Two time, two time, two time. Fucking A, Maddie was right about the Imagine Dragons guy. God damn.
I can no longer. I'm so out of being able to tell directions. That is my left ear.
This is brutal. Nope. I'm not gonna subject my ears anymore. That a minute 15. That's a
Yeah.
record.
Even a single.
God. That's brutal. That's
Yeah.
really brutal. Hello, humans, and welcome to Audio Face. We are an irreverent podcast about music, news, and culture that mostly matters. I am Sean.
I'm Dan.
And this is episode 180, and we've got a good show for you lined up. We've got three albums that we're going to review. We've got El Dorado by 24 Golden,
24 karat
24K
golden.
Karat Golden, 24K Golden, whatever.
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
I'm
This is what
over
it does. We've got The Bitter Truth by Evanescence, and then we have Oh No by Juju. So three very, very different albums throughout there. And we got some singles that we'll get to in a second and all that jazz. But just want to say thank you for listening to us and choosing us to be your music podcast of
Musical
choice.
guides to the
Musical
week of
guides.
what has been a really eventful week in
Yes.
music. I'm really excited. Can we get to the singles?
Let's hop at it. So first thing, we got Buzz Cut by Brockhampton featuring Danny Brown.
Love it. Folks, we love it. I mean, I'm a fan.
I like it a lot too. Very, very good. So Brockhampton's like either hit or miss for me for a lot of their stuff
Yeah.
and stuff that we reviewed. And this is definitely their hits. This is one of like me a return to form in my eyes of Brockhampton because some of the earlier work they've had a couple years ago I liked, and their latest album that they had maybe 2 years ago that we reviewed, I was a little wishy-washy. But Buzzcut is a fantastic track.
Yeah.
Really, really good. Just out of the gates, everything is fantastic.
It's so good. One thing I really like is the way it sort of like switches and slows up in the like beginning.
Yeah,
It's just
yeah.
like the beginning and the middle are very different from each other. And Danny Brown's part just gets into a really nice groove with things.
I always
More
like Danny Brown,
Brockhampton will
so.
be, yeah. Danny Brown's like his career's done nothing but he's been one of those artists that improves over time.
Yes.
More on that later, contrasting at least. But more Brockhampton should be coming later on this year. Pretty
Yes.
excited to hear about that. So that should be really good on Audio Face.
Yep.
Next up, we have Last Day on Earth by Biba Doobie.
Yeah, B2B, she's her first single released up for this year. This is produced by Maddie and George of the 1975, and you can definitely hear it. More like that poppy kind of sound. It sounds a lot like Me and You Together song from 1975,
Yeah.
which is okay. I like that she's like branching out and working with other people and stuff, which she has before, but now it's really trying to go out and not just stick to one like particular sound for it.
Yeah.
So it's a decent track. I like it.
Was it song write it? Like, was it written by the 1975?
It might have. If it was written by the 1975, that would make a lot of sense because it is very similar to Me and You Together songs, like, especially the production
of it. Sounds like the production, like, songwriting naturally Biba Doobie, but it sounds like a lot of the production for sure is in 1975. And I think I read something somewhere that the songwriting was also
1975. I wouldn't be surprised. Because Maddie's vocals are on there.
Yeah, I hear backing vocals. I remember hearing backing vocals in it, and I also think there's kind of like a sassiness that I'm not saying Biba Doobie isn't capable of, but also sounds very characteristically like George and Maddie Healy.
Yeah, exactly. Which is fine. They really have a distinct sound now, like that. They have a very specific production sound and everything. We heard that with the No Roam Charlie XCX single, Spinning, that came out a couple weeks ago. Kind of same thing. There's a very particular sound that George likes to make, so it's good. Yeah. We just need to see what she does, if she has a new LP coming out this year or not, or if she's just now going to do a couple singles here and there. So take your time.
And challenge mode for the 1975 new sounds.
Branch out, exactly.
And for Dirty Head in general, branch out. A cool little club, but just like branch out and grow and explore.
Yes.
Charlie XCX is a good start for sure.
Exactly.
Now,
oh Jesus Christ, we got
friends of the show.
Friends of the show, Imagine Dragons. They have a new double single, "Follow You" and "Cutthroat." Their new upcoming album will be released later this year, and I don't want to do it.
Depends on the week.
I don't want to do it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna retire.
So "Follow You," actually, I've decided is the least bad of the two. Honestly,
I mean, both are going to be nominated for worst song on Nuked Flat, Scorched Earth, Hawaii, No Quid Pro Quo, and keep continuing.
Keep adding to the list.
Shipping Lanes 2021. Just Infrastructure Deal 2021. Just keep going.
Yeah, it's. The production has not very much evolved from the early 2010 sound that Imagine Dragons are
known for. It has been the same production for about 9-10 years.
I'd say the vocal and stylings are a little bit better here, I'd say, or like different.
Different, but not better.
Yeah, let's not say
that.
Yeah.
I will follow you way down, wherever you may go. I follow you way down, to your deepest low. I'll always be around, wherever life takes you. You know I follow you. Call you up, you've been crying all night. You're only disappointed in yourself. Oh, poor choice of words.
Yeah.
No, I mean, like, different, but still, everything, like, follow you is just ear-wrenching, terrible, and that's... Follow You is one of the tracks that I talked about, like, or styles of tracks that I talked about in our year of music, State of Music Industry episode that we did a few weeks ago, where I said that alternative music, there are artists that make really shitty ones where it just is overproduced to everything and it's just crap in general, basically. And Follow You is that sound that I've been talking about for alternative music. You have artists like IDK Howe with Razzmatazz album that came out last year. Fantastic alternative rock. There's a lot of artists that are making good alt music. And then you have people like Imagine Dragons, which I swear are just industry plants now. And people try to promote and say, oh, it's so good. It's not.
They just get a lot of radio play because, I don't know, I guess they have all the deals with all like the iHeartRadio or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, Cutthroat is... I don't totally mind breaking the audio face rule for this just because it's like such garbage, but we're doing that now. It's pretty bad.
It's horrendous. It is horrendous.
It's like the same Imagine Dragon stuff that we've been hearing for a long time. It's really terrible. Yeah.
Everything, and then the thing that pisses me off the most too is the substance of the lyrics are just horrendous. Because we've talked about the lead singer and stuff of Imagine Dragons before and how he's had like a different... controversies throughout a couple of years, and this is not being self-aware of yourself and making all of the lyrics just basically oblivious to who you are as a person, and it's just bad.
My money is good and I came to win, so step on up, I promise you. I'm so misunderstood, but I live for this. It's just so like...
I like the haters. Yeah. Just...
I'm tired of all the winning. I'm so tired of all the winning because it's fake winning. And it's just kind of like, eventually you stop walking around the side of the park where the cranks are. You just like, you just like negotiate the way you like walk around your day and just like try to like move on from it. That being said, those are the singles. That being said, these are the plugs. Audioface Pod. Make sure you check us out at youtube.com/audiofacepod. We're having videos up every day. And that's one of the coolest ways you can help us grow the show, one of the newer ways. YouTube.com/audiofacepod. Make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you hit the bell. Do all that stuff. It's fun. Twitter.com/audiofacepod. We have a Twitter account that we use, and we're using it more. So follow us there. And Instagram.com/audiofacepod is also where you can follow us. Power Report, we did an episode last week. We'll do another episode in the next week. But check that out at powerreport.world for all of those links. And thank Dan, it's Friday, my stream. Follow me at Dan from the Web on Twitter for like updates on that. I think we might be changing around the time or like something stuff like that. But I'll have updates for you. Make sure you just follow me on Twitter for that. That's the fastest I got through the plugs because this is
hilarious.
This I love that we're gonna get out ahead of the story and watch the week that's about to happen. Because there's gonna be a lot more response and madness where this came from. But let's start where it began with Lil Nas X releasing the video for Montero, which is just sent everyone
hilarious.
It sent everyone on one.
It is the imagery and everything in there. It's actually a pretty neat, nifty music video.
Yeah,
I like it.
It's parentheses call me by your name. It's maybe the song people heard in the background of the 6ix9ine dunk. Cocaine and drinking with your friends. You live in a dark, boy. I cannot pretend. I'm not faced, only here to sin. If you've been in your garden, you know that you can. Call me when you want, call me when you need. Call me in the morning, I'll be on the way. Call me when you want, call me when you need. Call me out by your name, I'll be on the way. Like, and a couple of other Lil Nas X things that have been posted on TikTok and social
Ultimate
media.
Ultimate troll Lil Nas X.
Incredible. Yeah, and so the video features a lot of, you know, kind of imagery we've seen. I guess it's now characteristic of the late 2010s, early 2020s, mm-hmm. where just like every rap trap video yep. is just pushing the boundaries of like sexuality
yeah,
and like what is allowed on TV. But like,
I get the bag video.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, here's the thing. We've been doing this in a one-sided way for a while. Now we're going to do a lot of different spins on it with like Cardi B and Meg Thee Stallion doing WAP or with this, which you have, Lil Nas X sliding down a stripper pole down to hell and doing
giving the devil a lap dance.
Yeah, Lucifer himself. But more on that later, because there's actually a little bit of a weird story to that. weirder than like what regular people are talking about with it, but we will get to it. Anyways, people were just like mayhem, chaos. People hated it. There are a bunch of like, obviously Christian conservative commentators who are like, this is going too far. You can't talk about these. This is devil. You're indoctrinating kids. All these different things that always happen. A particular thing, Shade Room, which is just always trying to cause trouble, basically posted this thing. And the comments of it are just like a murderer's row of like black Christianity's heads exploding.
Oh my God.
It's like, still, don't play with God. So many ways of being creative, but using religion is not one of them. This video is just demonic. Has nothing to do with Hun wearing wigs. It's like, it's tinged with this sort of like homophobia in addition to all of this stuff. But Lil Nas X continuously, despite all of the criticism he's gotten, despite just like the stuff about his sexuality, but even when he made Old Town Road and he was like, people were like, oh, this isn't country music enough to be country music. Or like, oh, this isn't rap enough to be rap. He defied those criticisms and like got awards in both genres
yes.
and like crossed them both. With this and like with other things that have been like attacks towards his sexuality, like when he cosplayed as Nicki Minaj that one time, he's just like, fuck you, I don't care, I'm living my life. Fuck Lil Uzi Vert can put a fucking diamond in his skull.
And no one anyone. Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like, just because it doesn't make your dick twitch, it's a problem. Like, it's apparently an issue. But I think one of the more heartwarming things from this is that there's a thing from his dad who was like, very creative video, I got through it.
live life on your terms, very proud of you.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
And Lil Nas X released the video kind of like by saying, like writing a letter to himself, like saying, I made a song with our name because Montero's his like real first name. And it's like about a boy he's like fantasizing about or like met the previous summer. And that he said, I know, he's talking to himself, right? He said, I know that I would never tell the world about I was gay or whatever, but I'm doing this so that in the future, people can like look up to this person who's being like unapologetic for who they are. And they no longer have to feel like the sort of shame and fear that I felt when I was your age. So basically just like have hope, it gets better, that kind of deal. That's like the whole, like half the point, but also the point is just like it's a raunchy music video and it did everything it's supposed to, which it triggered people, it caused a conversation, and it's a That's really catchy song, and so it's going to chart really well. Like Lil Nas X, people always say, oh, but is Lil Nas X even like an artist, like, or a musician person? And we reviewed the 7 EP and we were like, okay, there could be something here if he continues with this.
And
he is. He's also doing the thing that artists who are, like, I'm not saying Lil Nas X is like the best artist of our time, right? But there are artists who are way shittier than him who also do these publicity stunts all the time. And like, there isn't that much drama around. It's like, oh yeah, he's just doing publicity stunts. That's just who he is. There's always this extra thing.
Uzi Vert with a diamond in his face.
Exactly, right?
Case in point.
Any of the number, like, I guess this is like past a long time ago, but there used to be like all these other like pop celebrities that were like doing these dumb things in and out of rehab and stuff. Yes. Like, but whatever. I think the more interesting criticism of the Lil Nas X video is that there are a lot of scenes that look like FKA Twigs' Cellophane music video, a ton of them.
Yeah, mainly the sliding down the pole scene.
Yeah, the sliding down the pole part, but there's apparently a thing about, you know, these are sort of like rumors, but it's like kind of picking up steam that apparently, what was it? The team with Lil Nas X tried to seek out the same director or videographer for it to try to like recreate it.
Oh, okay.
Which is a thing that's like, it's been a similar sort of criticism that's been lodged that like, oh, that was the thing that happened with Justin Bieber and Justice, where it's like, oh, Justin Bieber went like, oh, to make this logo for our album, we may or may not have actually reached out to Justice's, the electronic music duo, their artist, to make something that looks like their logo but isn't like. So it's very obvious, kind of like, you know, the stuff that lawyers salivate over.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's, you know, it is definitely like a rougher thing to notice and look at. But also there's a number of different, like, the idea of like sliding down into hell.
Sliding
is not
hell, yeah, exactly.
Boom, amazing like thing. But I guess it's something I'd note. Overall, the bulk of the story is Lil Nas X just continuing to
just troll everybody.
Troll everybody in the largest way, and the trolling's not over yet. We're doing this video on Sunday. I usually don't like do the curtain behind the veil here, but this video will go up on like a Tuesday, and the podcast will go up on Monday.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a flood.
A flood of just
right wingers because they have nothing to talk about. The cancel culture juice has already run out.
Yeah.
But like, here comes the Kool-Aid man, but the Kool-Aid man is just homophobia and with a little bit of racism because the immigration, the border stuff is happening. Yeah. Hashtag no politics, wait for power report. And so they're going to have this to talk about, and they're just going to be so obnoxious in about it, and it's going to be really funny, and we'll have some stories to talk about next week. Because this week is a little slim pickings after this. However, now we'll move on from that pretty funny, juicy story to the albums. Would you like to take us away?
Yeah, so first, album review we've got 24K Golden's El Dorado, 13 songs, 36 minutes long. And we listened to it so you don't have to.
We've done a lot of these lately.
It's pretty trash. This is the most, like, as I said earlier, that Imagine Dragons are industry plants. This is the most industry plant trap you can have, where it's just cookie cutter, everything sounds the fucking same throughout it. There's no innovation. The production is very lazy. It's you know, copy paste repeat, just over and over again with it.
Yeah, this is the early stage, or like mid cycle Taylor Swift of trap music. This is like Ariana Grande levels of like, dude, it's you. Like, it's not like all these women are disloyal to you, and like you're the special person. Like, you are just a bit of an asshole. I mean, considering the company he keeps himself with, considering he has Futures.
One of the first Futures. Da Baby, Swae Lee.
Free Slim Jimmy.
Free Slim Jimmy. Well, not much.
Well, but. Yeah, you know. And then Ian Dior for a last song that's truly like the intersection of like emo trap, which the production on here is, it's not as bad as other industry plant that we did. Last year.
No.
The one we did that everyone did the YouTube video where they hated, they commented on it saying it was terrible. With like Gorgeous was a song on it.
Oh, Saint John?
Yes.
Saint John?
Yeah. It's not as bad as Saint John's production. This is a little bit better, but it's still like lyrical quality whatsoever.
Again, copy, paste, repeat. That's all it is. The first song, the top. I swear to God, I've heard that song, not necessarily like exactly that song, but something similar to it for the past 6 years.
Right.
The song Company Future, I'm just gonna say Future is the most overrated artist in music. I'm controlling my bitch without using a remote. I done came from the bottom. I started with nothing. To go out and give me a drink. I had a special new army. Started the trenches. These bitches gon' do what I say. So I'm popping my shit. You know damn well I'm lit. I've been fucking these thotties. I'm loaded and rich. Came up from nothing. You know these racks. All these gold digging bitches. I sit the smoke. Set a nigga on fire. And kill all the witnesses. I get it lit. I get it hot. Just ask the real niggas on my block. She wanna dance. Well, I got the moves. Yeah, I'm looking like Michael Jackson. 100%. Lover Lust is nothing fantastic. That basically, like, there's a couple songs that blew up. You have Coco with DaBaby. I just don't like any DaBaby work. Coco no Chanel. Super pretty, chat the niggas, she said she could tell. Make her feel like I'm from heaven, but I still put her through hell. They wasn't pop, but I was pop. Them niggas ain't rock. The way that I rocked, I realized they ain't made me well. Told her don't call my phone with all that nice shit.
I mean, DaBaby has only become a meme now at this point, like, for the kind of, like, white kids who Vince Staples raps about, who, like, enjoy rap culture from the, like, comfortable houses they live in suburbia.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, I think there's, like, one Vince Staples video where, like, the end of it is, like, you just saw the Vince Staples, like, ratchet music video from the screen of, like, a white guy, a white, like, teenager in suburbia, just, like, watching it comfortably from their house. Exactly. Like, it's just, like, this is the whole point of, like, DaBaby's whole career, is it's just, he's become a meme and has been posted everywhere the same way.
Did you listen to DaBaby, Sean?
Like, if there was a DaBaby cryptocurrency, Elon Musk would ride that shit like a...
DaBaby NFT.
Yeah. More on that later, and amazing that I tapped the brakes. So there's nothing here I liked, honestly. I will say this. I really hated it the first time. The second time, I hated it less, but still very much hated it.
Fair play. Same
but
way.
Just like not like I don't like. Oftentimes, like especially the last two albums that we did, See You Don't Have To's for, which was Justin Bieber and Lana Del Rey, I barely could make it through either album.
So at least we could get through this one, which is because it's so generic. It's overly generic, where it's basically background music at like random parties.
Yeah, but it's like not even going to be good background music because like no one's going to like, who's a 20, like he has a lot of listeners or like streamers on
because
Spotify.
Because one song blew up, Mood, the last track has nearly a billion streams. I just want your company. Girl's obvious, elephant in the room. We're part of it, don't act so confused. And you love starting it, now I'm.
Because it has that sort of, it's probably like
a TikTok thing, I assume. It has that beat. It's short. It's only 220. It's one of those very, very catchy things where
it's like
just
a crossover
a formula,
emo rock kind of thing.
Exactly.
The kind of stuff that like made XXXTentacion blow up randomly because they're like, oh, this is a novel concept combining these two genres together.
Again, we've heard this for past five years, so it's nothing special. It's the thing with trap where trap is either very, very good. Or forgettable.
As an exercise in trying to not only dunk on an album and like drop a hot dookie on it, but also just say like references of things that are similar but better. Limbo by Aminé last year. I'd say this is like it's way more exploratory with production. It's way more exploratory with the ideas of like love and loss and loyalty.
Fucking
and all
Drake's
those
album
things.
Is better than this.
Take 20% off there, Sean.
Because like it's there might because with Drake you might get one track that I can at least listen to and not want to just rip my heads off and go rest, and the rest is just bleh.
I'm gonna have to like
so that's it.
Douche my mouth out with bleach or something, but. In defense of 24 Karat Golden, I'd say at least he has fewer features than Drake would.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because Drake is just, like, all he does is have his, like, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, all he does is have a bunch of artists feature on his songs.
Yeah.
And then does the same sort of drone thing all the time. And, like, you know, just, like, cash in once a year. Call it, oh, this is a mixtape. This is an album. This is an Adidas shoe with my name on it. And this is just, like, that's just his life.
And then goes to random basketball games.
At
and
least
has to cover up his tattoos.
At least 24 karat golden put his neck out in committing himself to most of these songs on his own. At least he didn't drag anyone else down with him. I mean, Future, a little, well, like, again, like, none of these people, like, other than, like, Ian Dior really benefited much from this, but yeah, it's good.
It's...
Arbitrary Scale this week are Trade Roots.
Trade Roots!
In honor of Green River, or that one boat Suez, that's blocking the Suez Canal.
Yeah, I forget what it is, but you can pick a trade route, any trade route, whatever it is. It's gone throughout history, whatever you want.
Yeah, this is the Panama Canal, but in the 1900s when it was still
when it was actually enough? Okay.
Yeah. So, like, there's a lot of potential there, but you need a little bit more big stick diplomacy. And by that, I mean, like, Theodore Roosevelt's a fucking war criminal.
I was going to say, this is the spice trade where Christopher Columbus discovers America, quote-unquote discovers America, thinks... Because he's an
India.
Idiot. He discovers America, but thinks he's in India, so calls everybody Indians, and then just kills them all.
Yeah. So that was just like a foreshadowing, I guess. That's what it's called.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna let Dan take the wheel on this one.
So this is a good like follow up to our NFTs conversation, and this is a time where
NFTs are like blowing up now apparently too, and it's just people are spending absurd amount of money on them. Like, why? It's such a niche, tiny little thing that I
well like
yeah.
People who are better at explaining these things than I am can explain have explained on the internet and on YouTube especially like the Dutch tulip thing that happened in the 1300s and what happens with these like rushes and panics. Whatever, in economics more broadly, when, not to spray too off of this, but basically people get obsessed with a commodity and then they overvalue the product.
Yeah.
And then that is like not, tulips. Like, whereas usual supply-demand economics is like, oh, this thing is supposed to cost this because of, like, all the market factors, like competition and how much it actually took to
supply
get there
side,
and then
Jesus.
Bringing the, like, cost down, all that stuff. But no, this is an overvalued asset. It's not worth as much as it should be. Eventually that's going to burst. And the people who are over invested in it are going to suffer and lose a lot of money as a result. But like for now, NFTs are a lot like Bitcoin, where like there's a lot of Bitcoin in like 2013, 14. There's a lot of promise, and arguably you could say this today too. There's a lot of promise about it where it can change. There's a lot of people with a lot of money who are getting into the hype, and so you're seeing a lot of advertisements and marketing for it. But ultimately, its real life uses and applications are far from happening because people are just slow to adopt to things that aren't measurably nice for them. And so when people are barely using things, you have to look at a lot of the consequences, which brings the fact that NFTs, to kind of an addendum to what we said in the video, it requires really powerful computers that take a lot of electricity, something that's really bad for the environment. Something that something that a band that has talked a lot about environmental protection, such as Gorillaz, should probably not want to do. However, because speaking of feeling old, last week marks the 20th anniversary of the self-titled Gorillaz album. Gorillaz are going to be releasing a lot of anniversary reissue things. One of them being relevant to the NFT conversation, working with Superplastic to sell like NFT versions of, I guess, like the Gorillaz characters or something, which is definitely something that is not only against like the era of like Plastic Beach and the whole wasting of all these things.
Hence the whole fucking album.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's hypocritical for Gorillaz to do a collaboration with Superplastic to do like figures, because like they're cartoon characters. That's like going to be the marketing aspect of it. That's going to be what they do. But you to do it as an NFT, I mean, maybe you're using less plastic, but the cost of doing all these calculations for NFT is so bad for the environment at a time when we don't have a renewable energy like green grid. So it's just like the pros, there are no pros and there are a lot of cons. So hopefully Gorillaz like listens to fans who are saying that this is not a good idea to just like kind of jump into, even though a lot of bands, we talked about Kings of Leon kind of kicking it off earlier this month, but a lot of bands are really getting into NFTs as a way that they can make money. And that's what we saw. It's like probably the best case scenario out of this that cuts out a lot of middle people. And it's a relatively simple way for like a band to give something that doesn't cost a lot to them and make a lot of money off of it from like rich assholes who get into NFTs. The thing is, like, regular people don't use NFTs. A lot of regular music fans aren't using NFTs, or even using like cryptocurrencies, yeah, stuff like that. So it's so niche right now that, cool, it's a great way to get a lot of money, and maybe a lot of these bands are starving for money, probably not gorillas, but it's kind of a thing we want to say, let's not do this, please.
Let's chill a little bit. And moving on to music business worldwide,
Slim Pickens.
So SoundCloud have an accelerator program to market like new upcoming artists. So they have, how many do they have? Eight?
I should know the number, I'm sorry.
But nine emerging artists headlined their first on, like, their first on SoundCloud. Yeah. That's the program.
Let me name some of the ones we might know. Charmine, Ella Minus, Kid Quill, Loridus, Otis Kane, Pasalu, Payday, Sophia Mills, and Sofego, of which I know none of them. But the first on SoundCloud emerging artist platform has featured Kehlani, Little Sims, Rico Nasty. So a lot of people that we eventually do know come out of these things. So it'll be interesting to see. Again, we're talking a lot about the things that Spotify does that are kind of like annoying.
Yeah.
SoundCloud's doing the thing that Spotify was promising they would do a while ago, which was start to take on artists and act as the label for them. But instead of doing all the really shitty things that big labels would traditionally do, give them some of the
platform
advantages that are also a little bit unequal that maybe we'll talk about just like right now. So there's this really interesting other article in Music Business Worldwide, Slim Pickens. where there's a basically group called Impala, no relation to Tame Impala or the Chevy Impala. that is
or the animal
that represents most of the, or many of the biggest European independent record labels. And so it's good that these things exist because they can kind of get together and represent a larger thing to go against like the larger big record labels. And there's laid out basically like a 10-point plan to make art and music streaming more fair for these new labels. And one thing that I think was like the headline thing was the idea of payola, which is a fun phrase, but it's line 4 in it. So it's basically, assure there'll be no reductions in royalties in exchange for enhanced plays or privileged treatment in algorithms or other features that recreate elements of payola. Payola is just like a larger, why do I do so many economics things on AudioFace now? It's like a concept where, it's very easy. It's just like bribery. It's like you're paying someone to
get promote your music more and to have more streams go onto your like New Music Friday lists, onto your like Rap Caviar lists on Spotify, or whatever that is.
The entire social media internet works like this, where and like the regular internet, like if you ever see Google ads and you see multiple ads on a Google search,
that's how it works.
You pay more money to get your ad higher up.
Yes.
And you're from one of those three. Same thing with less transparent forms of advertising like, on Spotify, on Apple Music. And so a lot of the major labels are able to put their music at the top, even though these companies have algorithms that are smart enough to find music that's like more suited to what you might like, even though it might not be like the stuff that's at the top. But the labels show it in front of your face on New Music Friday, and that's why it's helpful to have podcasts like ours that sift through that stuff and can find other albums through the like thousands that get released.
And then tell the ones that are industry plants trash that they are indeed trash.
Yeah. So we can just kind of do all of that here. And so the other like interesting ways that were promoted on here that I think are good were basically just allowing you to search on platforms by performers, producer, composers, labels, authors, publishers, all these other like more categories. Very easy to do. Maybe not all the music has this metadata, but most of it does. Mm-hmm. And you can introduce more models and rates, basically just being a lot more transparent with the way artists get paid and allowing hopefully more artists get paid, laying the groundwork for that. That's, not just putting up a website like Spotify did.
Yeah.
Yes. So let's move on to more albums, right?
Yeah, so we have The Bitter Truth by Evanescence, 12 songs, 47 minutes long. Evanescence
has been a
while. They've been around for a long time.
Yeah, yes. I think it's been like since their last proper album. It was like 2011, since like the last one. There are a couple things like Synthesis and Synthesis Live. There were like Synthesis was a different project in 2017 that I think was a little bit separate. But what I was reading from about The Bitter Truth, if I remember correctly, is that this was the first album that she'd really worked on the lead singer since having her son.
Yeah.
And she's like six now. He's like six now or whatever. And so it was another one of those things where an artist takes a little while away from their music to experience life and come back to the music with a new, refreshed sense of going about things, as opposed to just churning crap out every single year, which happens in all genres. We talk about it a lot in the mainstream genres because it's just so an affront to the art that's in mainstream. But this is where a case where you're getting it mostly for the better here. So it's 12 songs, 47 minutes long. I think you said that already.
Yes.
We usually do. And it starts with Artifact the Turn, which is a nice like, sort of soft sort of intro to these into Broken Pieces Sunshine, which is everything Evanescence fans expect.
Yeah,
now.
Exactly.
It's really nice.
It's nice because it says they say true to their sound. It's hard rock, you know, hard rock metal ish. Her voice is fucking fantastic, still really, really good. So there is some good there. Right after the game, right after Broken Piece, third track, The Game Is Over, is where I started to like, get into this album. I really enjoyed that track, where that's like a solid Evanescence song, but it's not like cookie cutter from their older stuff per se, but a little bit more. More substance within the lyrics and everything in there. So, Evanescence fans of old and of recent will definitely enjoy this album for sure for what it is. And then after The Game Is Over, you have Yeah Right, which is also a pretty good track as well. And then going on, skipping on a little forward, you have Wasted On You, which is...
it's their lead single.
Yeah, which I think is, might be their best track. Other than, I did like Yeah Right, where it's that one, they're kind of like experimenting a little bit in the beginning. So they do that a lot with the tracks on this album, where the first maybe 45 seconds to a minute of the track is slower or whatever. They might experiment a little bit, and then they get into like the solid rock of essence of the song itself. And that definitely happens on Wasted On You, where Wasted On You starts off with that, like, just vocals, slow piano in the beginning, for maybe the first 40, 45 seconds, and then after that, then it builds into this solid rock sound throughout, so which I like.
Yeah, I felt like it had sort of like a creep progression almost with like the way she was singing about it.
Yeah.
But like it's been used in like
it's songs been used a bit,
lot.
Yeah.
So, but like it's a really nice sort of thing that goes really well together. I liked the second half of the album more than the first half generally, and it started with "Wasted on You." I think
because
better
it's,
with that.
It slowed down a little bit, and that's when they got to that's when they experimented more with like the substance of each track, where the production was kind of the same throughout it, which is fine because it's coherent and it's cohesive. But each of the track, like the it wasn't just, you know, rock in your face the high, entire time. It'd slow down and speed up. It'd be more of a roller coaster ride through each track.
And it's like, I generally liked that from old Evanescence. Mm. It's just more just like I wanted to see more of an evolution. Also, to make sure I wasn't going crazy, I checked. Amy Lee told Kerrang! Magazine in a cover story that she considers Bitter Truth to be their fourth album and not Synthesis. And I'm not sure exactly what the thing is, but like it's their fifth album
so,
overall.
Yeah, because that's what I thought too. Okay, so...
But I'm not sure why. Maybe it's that like creative, refreshing aspect of it. Maybe someone should read that interview and figure that out. I'm not going to steal their magazine reads. They probably need it. Magazine. So yeah, I really like Better Without You and the way it sort of kind of rides that blend of a little bit experimental with heavy rock.
We'll be right back.
still keeping what keeps Evanescence really nice. Mm-hmm. Experimental, not like what we just heard, a little bit of a tease from the horrors, let's say, but definitely well within mid to late 2010s.
Yeah, like, exactly. So
really nice.
I like how the album ends. I think it's pretty solid with Part of Me and Blind Belief. Part of Me is more of a, like, looping it back to the beginning of the album, but that more of like straight harder rock towards it. The last track, Blind Belief, if I could speak English, then it's like, it starts off like that instrumental piano, and that one is kind of like basically really wrapping everything up, where it has like elements of the first half of the album, elements of the second half of the album into one track to really wrap it up. So
yeah.
Overall, I think it's a very good effort. I think it's a solid album since, you know, they haven't made one in a long time. I was surprised to see them on the list for 2021, but it's good. I like it.
Yeah, it's really solid. I think people will. It's not too much change.
No. It's enough change to not be just like a cookie cutter or like sound way too old into their own sound. But it's enough of a refresher. Mainly the lyricism of it. It's more of a refresher on a, like, reflection on life and all these other aspects into it. And the musicality of it's still pretty good. So it's enough change to have a band that's been around for, you know, 15, 20 years or so. To at least have some type of impact on a year. So,
yeah.
Overall, I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Arbitrary scale that we do every single week, because rating systems for music is basically a pointless exercise. I'm going to use the Amber Road.
Damn it, I was going to say the Amber Road too.
Damn it. Well, we often do this, because we're usually like, happens. I mean, that means that codifies the score. Yes. That means it's a really good score. Amber has been traded since about 3000 before Common Era.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's what do the kids say? Old but gold?
Old but gold, baby.
Yes. Also, kids don't say that, really. Just only old heads say that now. It's really good. And they're always talking about any rap music, any hip hop music that sounds good in one of those tape decks that you would carry around.
That's hilarious.
In the 80s. Like an Xer. Anyways.
So System of a Down, I guess the guitar, not the guitarist.
Yeah, this is
the guitarist. Yeah, sorry.
Darren Malakian.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Basically in the wake of a series of shootings that have happened in the United States,
and
came
Boulder
out.
And, a couple other places.
Yeah. Sure, there was in Colorado, there was in Atlanta, and of course this is America, so they happen fairly often, but, this is a thing I don't really share that often, but I guess I will just in the context of this, because it makes no other sense otherwise. But at TYT, there's a certain point where we would do news stories and we'd have to go, okay, we cover 10 news stories in a day. But like mass shootings would happen all the time. And we would go, okay, there's like no room to cover a mass shooting. Like, what's the point of covering like another mass shooting? Like, and so even though you'd have mass shootings happening every single day, we'd have to make the decision at a certain point, just like, okay, how many mass shootings can we cover before we just said the same thing over and over again? And so it's a weird thing the news media does, where it like normalizes the mass shootings. It makes people numb to the mass shootings, because like it happens so often, it truly happens so often, that almost it's hard to report it. It's just like the weather. It's just like, okay, here's the map of shootings that happened today.
Can we bet on futures of mass shootings?
I mean, it's dark, but like we're speculating on literally everything else. Why not?
Enron speculated on weather, so we might as well.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Anyways.
Shout out to those of you who know what Enron is.
Yeah. Friends Eat the Rich podcast are doing a series on Dick Cheney right now.
Oh, okay.
So
talk about that.
you can go into that. They're doing Dick Cheney part one and part two. But anyways, hashtag no politics. Even though we're like smack dab in the middle of the Senate divide.
So anyways.
He tweeted that guns are essential tools for self-defense, adding the hashtag defend gun control. And he's also spent like the past year saying that Donald Trump was the greatest friend of minorities, saying that there's no systemic racism in the United States, that Black Lives Matter could care less about black people, and the 2020 election was illegally stolen from Trump. So he's knee-deep in the Johnny Rotten, most of Mumford & Sons kind of, like, spiel of alt-rightism stuff. And it's kind of annoying. But the interesting thing here is the vocalist for System
Surge.
Of a Down.
Surge.
Yes. Is who also happens to be the brother-in-law, which has got to be interesting Thanksgiving dinners, kind of comes to speak out and say that I love and respect John Dolman very much, but I don't love and respect his American political views.
Yeah, so the thing with System of a Down is their songs have been, like, pretty radical and stuff. Like, and is it BYOB, where it's, why do they always send the poor?
Yeah.
And just a bunch of stuff of anti-war themes and all of these other things throughout their band. It's just kind of hilarious that that's what they're doing. Or at least that's what he's doing. But Surge is like, I'm not down for that shit.
Yeah. It's John Dolman who's, like, doing all of the comments about, like, Donald Trump and stuff.
Yep,
and then Darren Malakian is doing all the, like, Second Amendment posts. And he's just, like, big into this. And so, like, he's at least saying that there's some people in the band who are not okay with this. And I think, like, over time, this is going to be, like, a more sticking point with bands.
Yeah, where they're, like, they will get divided and stuff because of that, for sure.
Yeah.
Especially if you're as a politically divisive band as System of a Down, I'm surprised that they're that different on the spectrum.
Yeah.
So, I mean, granted, look at Rage Against the Machine. You have an anarchist and a communist. So the people can get along if they're completely different on different spectrums and still make pretty fucking good music. So it's interesting.
That's what I was going to say, is that there's a lot of good to be had. Meanwhile,
meanwhile, there's not good to be had with Ted Nugent because.
Yeah, there's no surprises here.
No, God, no. So he used the N-word to explain why he isn't racist. Best thing is when you say, I can.
So, should I?
Yeah, I'm not.
So, we know Ted Nugent has a long career. I think one of the things I remember when I was a kid was Ted Nugent threatening to kill Hillary Clinton or something.
No, I'm not surprised.
Something about, like, referencing
I know
song.
He definitely
I'm not
going
to go into
Obama
it because it's kind of graphic,
sure.
But, like, yeah. I think it was something like Suck on My Shotgun. We were pretty serious about that. But basically, he's saying that he was called the N-word by a member of the Funk Brothers, and it was one of the biggest compliments of his life. More on that cuck shit later. But we, quote, we knew when we were going to open for the Supremes, we knew that the Funk Brothers and the Motown Orchestra, the top musical authority on Earth, would be right next to us on stage. We knew to play tight and powerful. So we're putting our guitars away, and the Funk Brother, a big old black dude, comes up, puts his hands on my shoulder and goes, that was great stuff, that was great stuff, boys. You keep playing guitar like that, and you're going to be a N-word with a hard R when you grow up. The greatest compliment in the world. You keep playing guitar like that, and you'll be an N-word when you grow up. That word was the perfect expression that we had soul. Maybe it didn't go like that. I'm just gonna say maybe it didn't go like that.
Should,
or maybe it was like,
did we just give him like a nomination for the Hard R Award because it's just the amount of
like Morgan Wallen, he just used it. So
exactly.
Yes,
yeah, exactly. Just like on basis it. of the name of the award, you get nominated for the Hard R Award for bigotry in music. But again, it's just a Nugent. I'm not so fucking surprised.
Yeah, it's not really surprising. He's not the most He's not winning the No Name Wilk Award, let's say.
No. And then moving on to more Hard R
I mean,
award
I guess it's
nominees.
Like related because, like,
Morgan Wallen, he's going to headline a Bud Light sponsored Kicker Country Stampede.
Yeah, it's the first confirmed live performance since Morgan Wallen was caught using a racial slur on the Cameroonie.
I want to be a fly in the wall in that concert pit. I want to, oh my God, I want to just soak up the amount of racism that's in that pit.
I want to just, like, record it for Aaron Magruder to use inspiration for the new Boondocks so he doesn't mess it up.
That's rough.
Not salty at all. Let's go into El Lasterum.
All right, last one. So, we have Oh No by Juju.
Juju, yes.
It is 15 songs, 53 minutes long. And it is a very very interesting album.
Yes, Juju have been around in some form or another since the early 2000s as a really kind of eclectic indie group. This album is all duets, essentially.
Pretty much.
In a variety of different musical styles and cadences, and this is not popular music, this is not rock or alternative,
this is
all over the place, kind of experimental.
Extremely experimental, really all over the place.
r/indieheads music.
Extreme. This is one of those, you go to like downtown Fullerton and there's some dude sitting on the couch, he's listening to Juju.
Yeah.
He's sitting on the couch in the middle of downtown Fullerton.
This is music for people who feel like they're on ketamine without consuming ketamine.
Oh, no. Literally, oh, no. Anyways, going into the substance of the music, there is actually some really, really good tracks in here. And there's some other stuff where I literally had to pause it and go, what the fuck am I listening to? And there's other stuff in here where I'm like, holy shit, this is really good. So that's experimental music in a nutshell right there, where you're just trying different stuff. You're trying things that don't work in a normal setting, other things that wouldn't necessarily make sense in a normal setting, but sound really great
too. Listen to this album and treat it with an open mind, like going into an art museum with some really like out there concept.
Basically.
And each room is going to be like a song. It's going to be a slightly different concept, mostly connected together.
I think that's actually a very good analogy for it, where you're entering a room with each song, because Sad Mezcalita, yeah. the opening song, opening track, It's
like a wide, opens to be like a wide, almost orchestral strumming thing.
Exactly,
that starts off kind of weird.
And it's just basically a really light duet through it. And then halfway through, then it gets into this really weird drum beat type stuff, and then it goes back into your orchestral thing. So this is that opening track. Oh, well, okay, this is out there, but let's strap in and see what happens.
Yeah.
And then after that, I cannot resist. More of that, like, again, that, like, almost ethereal type sound. Reminds me of, like, old experimental cigarettes, unreleased tracks from them, where it's almost sounds like you're recording it in a warehouse with just, like, drum beats in the background. There's not much vocalization going on. It's very, very thorough. Decent, interesting track.
Grifters has this sort of, like, Eastern string sort of tone to it. And it's a lot about at least one of the members of the band sort of, like, going through feelings of betrayal. And kind of like acting, expressing those out.
It's the Grifter, so it should just, you know, be about YouTube and political news.
Working on that video should be fun. But even all of those songs have slightly different sounds. There's a little bit softer music, but like there's a lot of a chaos sort of like build up to drums that's happening in the middle. In the middle towards the end, that's also very good. You can continue talking about it, but I have one that I really like. I mean, like one of the lead singles, "Rumpus Room," in the middle.
Yeah, right before that. Oh No is an interesting track too. The title track, and it's a decent little experimental track too. "Rumpus Room" is pretty solid.
Oh, no, like when you're listening to the album in order, it kicks off like a more upbeat, sort of like random crazy part. Mm-hmm. "Rumpus Room" puts the craziness into like the most of like a palatable, like sort of not mainstream song, but something you can put in like a
It's a cool, fun track because it like I feel like I'm tripping in a clown house, like just like literally hitting walls as each sound different. It's not about it, this is just what I picture. You're just walking around and you're like walking into a bunch of mirrors of the staring into yourself. You're like, what is my brain? What is the earth?
Yeah. The music video is sort of like half a escort sort of like date situation and half like a meeting and then half sort of
so
like...
So half Eldrick Woods circa 2007?
Sort of, but also like Yeah, the clown show, like wall of mirrors kind of thing, where you're just like freaking out, looking around. It's an interesting vibe. You go into Fuzz Gong Fight, and I Dream of Somewhere Else, and you go into these like sort of lighter.
So Fuzz Gong Fight, literally, that's what I like. The track of the song is what the song is.
Yeah,
it sounds like a Fuzz Gong Fight.
Yeah,
it's cool. It's well actually, really, I actually like that track a bit too. It gets like from there, then it gets like. You have a lot of really more soundscape type tracks through it. You got like "I Dream of Someone Else," "Entirety of 100 Years," which is like that more of like you start to get more of into your indie, almost like I wouldn't say quite like horrors in a warehouse, but kind of that style of like deeper drums, deeper guitar work and stuff, and the vocals are kind of difficult to understand and difficult to hear, but you can at least hear them in the background.
There's a lot of computerization that you can tell
Yes.
Whereas a lot of the rest of the album feels like it's using a lot more traditional instruments, mm-hmm. even though they all like are clashing together in a weird way. So it feels very processed in that ways. The sort of like stream of consciousness monologue songs, kind of like I Dream of Someone Else and Entirely and It Bothers Me All the Time are similarly like ethereal and sort of dark in their ways, but also like very stressing as well. And, you know, just like very interesting. Like you said, it's like feel like you're going into a museum and you're having all these different sort of experiences throughout.
I think that's a great analogy for it. Because then going on to the later half of the album, you have Saint Dimphna and Knockout, which are two pretty decent tracks going in the back end. And you got A Bottle of Rum, which is this beautiful track. Gorgeous track. Really, really good. I think it might be the most listened to on the album.
Yeah, it feels properly like indie.
And it's like, it's that like perfect blend of experimenting so much throughout an entire album that you nail something on the head with everything. It's great. I really, really like that ending track. I'm glad I got through the album because halfway through I was like, I don't know if I'm going to finish this because this is really out there.
Very out there.
It's very out there, but I'm just going to sit through because indie is my favorite genre. I'm like, let me just like get through it, see what happens, and I was rewarded at the end.
And indie has been embracing a lot of really interesting new sounds for the better because there's so much wealth of creativity to be found in indie music. But this is pure indie. Like, this is like...
This is the,
you're
this
gonna
is
not
this,
like some
this
of
is
it.
What
like, this
genre,
is what the genre is.
Exactly. Because indie, when I listened, like, when I grew up listening to indie, there was a lot of weird shit. Björk was considered indie.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, still is. But that was my introduction to it, of her, like, just really out there, different concepts, and that's how I got into experimental music, was through indie.
We talked about, with Avalanches in the Oliver episode, and the Avalanches bonus episode, and that was, like, going through a lot of indie music like that, too. Like, that's just, like, really, like, random stuff, and that's the best of Juju here.
Yeah.
Shushu, that's what it
Shushu.
Is. Yes. Anyways, arbitrary scale, as far as trade routes, what are you going to give this?
God damn, that's hard. I might give this the salt route.
Hmm.
You know, one of the most important trade routes in human existence, because, you know, salt was used to preserve food and all this. But, you know, it's was old as hell, too, which is like my solid indie stuff.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. Works out. I'd give this the T-Horse Road.
T-Horse Road? I thought about that because of the name of it.
Yeah. Goes through Tibet. We love ourselves some Tibet, folks.
Free Tibet!
demonetized in China. Woo, 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 woo. Okay, quick hits.
Quick hits! Pop Smoke. He passes Eminem for the most music, most weeks at number one on hip-hop album charts. Which
is... so he's beaten Eminem's record for 20 weeks straight at the number one.
That's a lot. I'm actually surprised.
Drake's Take Care was on for 16 weeks. Marshall Mathers' EP was on for 14 weeks.
I thought Drake would have been up there longer, honestly. I'm surprised. Pleasantly surprised.
The Heist is at 13 weeks from Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. But now it's Shoot for the Stars, Aim for the Moon. And he's at the stars.
Yeah.
So good for him.
Rip Pop Smoke.
Woo woo. Young Boy Never Broke Again is
Young Boy Back in Jail Again.
Yeah.
Again.
So we always like to end audio face in a fun note. Even though the broader context of the American incarceral system is not a fun note, the idea that Young Boy NBA is once again in jail, and more specifically, in FBI custody after trying to evade FBI custody for an arrest on drug and weapons charges.
Warms my heart.
it's like hot chocolate on a winter evening.
Warms the soul. It's just, yeah, it's hilarious. Never broke again? Well, you're back in jail again there, sir.
Yes. 21-year-old Kentrell Galden was wanted on an outstanding warrant. Police attempted to pull him over, but wound up in a short pursuit trying to catch the rapper, who attempted to flee on foot. And based on his arrest, and also his lawyers are basically trying to come out saying that they're going to get him out. You know, again, might happen lawyers are able to help rich celebrities all the time. So that is maybe the fun note. But Young Boy NBA getting arrested again.
It's hilarious.
Come on.
Yeah.
Some things about rap music are just never going to change.
God, no. Never.
Yes.
But anyways, thank you for listening to Audio Face. You can find us at Audio Face Pod on Twitter, Instagram, and all socials. You can go to our YouTube page at youtube.com/Audio Face Pod, where you can find all the clips of album reviews, little fun stories like that, Youngboy NBA maybe, or other stuff that we'll have throughout just almost daily now, which is great. You can follow me at SW Suarez on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow Dan at Dan from the web on Twitter, Dan from the internet on Instagram. I think I did everything to play us out. Thank you for listening. As always, we'll catch you again next week. And if you didn't catch the Daft Punk bonus episode yet, listen to it. It's really, really, really good. And I don't like the sound of my voice. So if I say it's good, it's good.
Yeah, it's very good. Make sure you check that out and listen to that. It was very good. And it's a great way to send out Daft Punk. Or get into Daft Punk if you for some reason have not gotten into them. So check it out.
Yeah.
Talk to you next week. Cheers.
Toodaloo.